This is In the Fight, a Section 247 show presentation. Follow us on social media, Twitter and Instagram at In the Fight Show, on Facebook at facebook.com/In the Fight Show. Welcome to InTheFight.net's In the Fight Show, a combat sports experience talking MMA, boxing, and a little bit of professional wrestling. I am Michael Lipinski, joined as always by Brett Halpern, and you are listening to this live on Sportinarium Radio, sportinarium.com, at Sportinarium on Twitter and Instagram. You can find this here program on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at ITF Show. Brett, how are we? More weigh-in drama in the UFC.
Doing well. Excited about tomorrow's event and looking forward to the fights. You know, it's fight week, so I'm excited.
We had more weigh-in drama at the UFC. This is something that we touched on a week ago. It seemed every week it just kind of rears its ugly head. Beneil Dariush had the weigh-in twice. He made weight. We have a main event, a co-main event, I should say.
Yeah, I saw that. I was surprised because he's someone who typically makes weight. So I wonder what the issue was. That's definitely something to look out for tomorrow. Because if he had a bad weight cut, you know, I think his energy might be depleted. Definitely something to take into consideration when I make my picks.
There you go.
You should all look out for at ITF Show on Instagram and Facebook.
We have some breaking news here on the program. We have partnered with TKOstore.com. The neighbor has decided to cut their lawn. We're leaving this in, people. This is live. This is live entertainment for you. We have partnered with TKOstore.com. TKO Store is the newest and greatest way to buy fight merchandise. We are joining the likes of Alexio Liniak, Leonard Garcia, Leah McCreary, Marco Huas. Buy our merch once it comes out. TKOstore.com. Of all the time, right? Like we pick all these random times where we do our show, and this jabroni wants to cut the lawn across the street.
Well, he's not getting merch.
He's not getting merch. Anyone else can get merch, though. Be sure to check that out on our Twitter, Instagram. Follow those guys at TKO Store. Let's get into it. We're going to talk UFC 262. Everyone has made weight. The show is a go. No real drama, so to speak.
Yeah, other than the Beneil Dariush near fiasco. But either way, Tony Ferguson would have accepted the fight. Definitely excited. Watched the press conference the other day. There's definitely much better heat between the co-main event participants as compared with the main event participants. Oliveira and Chandler are both just really focused, rightfully so, on getting the belt. There's really no heat between them. Tony Ferguson, though, was kind of the star of the show. He was talking shit about everybody from Khabib. Even took a dig at Dana White, took a dig at Michael Chandler. Went after Dariush. He was all over the place. And interestingly, the crowd seemed to be mostly cheering for Tony Ferguson, which a lot of crowds are kind of find him strange. So I thought that that was interesting.
Yeah, what was that all about? Like, what was he? What did he just go into? I'm going to go after everybody mode and see what happens.
Well, so Tony is a guy who marches to his own beat. I mean, from a serious perspective, I mean, you know, a few years ago, they had to do a few wellness checks, you know, because at one point he thought that, I don't know, the government or some other, that Big Brother was listening in on him somewhere inside his fireplace. So that was an issue. Fortunately, I think I think he was.
Hold on. Well, you know, that was an issue. A little bit.
Well, you got to remember, he's a big 10th Planet guy. He is a Eddie Bravo disciple. So I believe he shares some of the same beliefs regarding the conspiracy theories that Eddie Bravo famously believes in, most particularly like flat Earth and things of that nature. So, look, you know, but Tony Ferguson is just a guy who marches to his own beat. I think what really kind of pissed him off, though, look, he acknowledged he had a rough year. He lost two big fights to Justin Gaethje, then to Charles Oliveira. But I think he's sitting there and he's watching Michael Chandler, who literally has only spent 2 minutes and 50 seconds in the octagon, who is now getting a title shot. And meanwhile, Tony Ferguson went on an undefeated streak that lasted over 5 years. And partly because his own fault, partly because of bad luck, and, you know, all the times he and Khabib were supposed to fight and it fell through. So I think he's frankly a little pissed off that Michael Chandler gets a shot. And that's why he said, you know what, you have Dana White privilege. I thought that was a pretty good line, actually. He was just pissed.
What did that mean?
Well, A, Michael Chandler's white, and B, he gets along with Dana White. Tony Ferguson and Dana White.
Okay, I understand. Got it. I understand now.
Because remember, you know, so going into UFC 223 in Brooklyn, Tony was doing an interview with, I guess at the time it was Fox Sports, and tripped on a cable and blew out his knee. And that's how it then ended up being Khabib versus Max Holloway. And then Max Holloway had to bow out the day before. And it ended up being Khabib against Ally Quinta. And that was the week that Conor threw the dolly. But it all started with Tony slipping over a cable doing UFC PR. And I think he never got over the fact that he was somewhat faulted for that. So, yeah, Tony was pissed, and
I forgot about that until you mentioned it. I do remember that now. I remember the drama surrounding that.
Well, look, I mean, I think, you know, when you look back in UFC history, one of the most anticipated fights that never happened was Tony Ferguson against Khabib Nurmagomedov. And these guys, literally, the fight has been scheduled 6 times. And it, you know, whether it was bad weight cuts, hospital visits, cable, slipping on cables, or global pandemics, this fight just never occurred. And, you know, Tony's pissed about it. And that's why he called Khabib a pussy, and he's not getting over that. I also think he's trying to position himself for, if he wins, potentially fighting for the belt or being very quick in line to fight for the belt, should he beat Beneil Dariush. He's just trying to cement his status by talking a lot of shit. So it was definitely an interesting press conference.
It made for interesting times, and it's interesting now with press conferences with people. Before we get into the UFC 252 card and we run it down, let's talk a little bit of steak. You like a nice little Kona rub on a steak?
I do. I definitely do.
You can get a Kona rubbed steak at the Paws Table. The Paws Table, 7 East Lancaster Avenue in Ardmore, PA, 610-589-0500. The Paws Table is a modern Italian steakhouse bringing Italian flavors, the finest cuts of steak, big chops, fresh seafood, seasonal vegetables, big salads, savory flatbreads, and unparalleled service to the heart of Ardmore, Pennsylvania. More importantly, a wrestling-oriented family that the Pauls are at the Pauls Table, real big into the combat sports world in Philadelphia. You should go check them out in the heart of the main line. Tell them that we sent you fantastic food. I highly suggest the Kobe beef meatball appetizer. That thing is unbelievable meal in its own.
The shrimp appetizer as well with the remoulade sauce. Fantastic.
You go to DePaulsTable.com. You can also get reservations on the website. Happy hour, Monday through Friday, 4:30 to 6:30. Good beer selection. Dinner, 5 to 9:30 daily. UFC 262, people in the stands, a full house in Texas.
Yeah, it's, it. You know, look, I have my misgivings about the fact that there are still fans, but, you know, per the CDC guidelines, it, things are loosening up, things are trending positively, so it's nice to see fans. It just brings a different energy.
Yeah, so, you mentioned it. Here we are. We're talking about it. The CDC came out and has essentially said, if you're vaccinated, God bless you.
You're good to go.
You're good to go. You have the 5G chip. We've stored you with the extra gasoline from the pipeline. Have at it. Certain states are slowing it down a bit, I guess, which is going to be real interesting. New Jersey, for example, the governor basically said, now keep your mask on inside. I'm sure that'll fly really well. And look, it's personal choice at this point. If you feel safer with it, so be it. But here we are, full house in Houston.
Yeah, you know, and Houston, the Toyota Center has played host to a lot of different UFC pay-per-views. I know they hosted one of the Cain Velasquez Junior Dos Santos trilogy fights. I know there was UFC 166. There was also that event was Diego Sanchez against Gilbert Melendez. Stipe Miocic defended the belt against Junior Dos Santos there. Basically, it's not a good venue for Junior Dos Santos, but he's not in the UFC anymore, so he's okay. But either way, just look, always excited for a UFC pay-per-view. To me, it's a fun-filled Saturday night. It's something we've been watching these since UFC 52 and still love them and just excited for it. And yeah, we're going to see a new lightweight champion in a very historic division.
Yeah, so let's talk about it. Michael Chandler, Charles Oliveira for the vacant UFC lightweight championship. Two-parter here. Yeah. Now, has this become the most coveted belt in the UFC? We talked about it offline and before, like when we started, it was the light heavyweight. And there's been different belts that have meant different things in the world of MMA. So is the lightweight title now the most coveted belt in the UFC? And is this not the top two contenders fighting for the belt? Okay, answer however you'd like.
Okay, well, I'm going to go in order, just try to keep things in a somewhat sane order. So part A of your question, I would say it's one of the most now historic belts in the UFC. But because it's a vacant title and whomever is winning this did not get it by defeating Khabib Nurmagomedov, it takes a little bit of the shine off it. However, they might be challenging Conor. They might be defending their belt against Conor McGregor next. So it could then very well take on a higher, higher prestige and a more noteworthy platform. Leading into part two of your question, or part B, right now I would tell you that they are among the top contenders, but the true top contender, the guy who, if you were just to award a belt without a vacant title fight, the belt should go to Dustin Poirier. And Dustin Poirier was given the opportunity to fight one of the guys in this fight for the vacant belt, or to have his red panty night and fight in the trilogy with Conor McGregor, and he chose to fight Conor McGregor because that's life-changing money for he and his family, which I get, and so now we're going to have two great fights in the lightweight division, but in a way, I feel as if, to me, it does take away some of the steam, some of the sizzle for tomorrow, for the UFC 262 main event.
So why couldn't, again, I'm a tournament guy.
Yeah.
Why?
You're always a tournament guy.
I am. Why couldn't Dana White just say, look, we're going to do an eliminator, right? This could still be your main event at 262. Winner moves on to face the winner of Conor Dustin. I don't understand why Poirier was right. Okay, when it comes down to it, and we're going to talk Conor McGregor later, the $180 million man. Yeah, you're going to take the money fight. you'd be an idiot not to. Yeah. And he's not an idiot. He's smart. I haven't tried his hot sauce. It looks okay. He is a businessman.
Very good.
So he, Dustin Poirier is smart. Taking the Conor McGregor fight is smart. And yeah, I mean, he could beat him and get his belt. I just think from a storyline perspective, making a story out of nothing, so to speak, with fights, it would have been cooler just to have, all right, this is going to be the semis. You're going to have a final. Create something.
Well, okay, so to play devil's advocate to that idea, if in fact you were going to have these two as semifinals, it doesn't it come off more valuable having it the way it is right now, where the guy who wins 262 main event is the champion, and then they go on to just defend the belt against Poirier or McGregor. And if Poirier beats McGregor again, I don't think he's ever going to attain the heights of Conor McGregor, but he's now a big name. He's already a big name, but he's going to be a very big name.
I want the manager of Dustin Poirier or Conor McGregor after this fight to walk into the locker room of whomever wins with a bag, with a belt in it, and say, I'm representing the real world's lightweight champion. That would be fantastic. Well, Bobby the Brain Heenan no longer here, so it can't be him, but you know, it would be that way. Let's get to the fight itself. Michael Chandler, UFC, Bellator guy, longtime Bellator guy. Does his presence on this card help the Bellator brand?
I think it does. Now, I think Bellator, in a strange way, should capitalize on this. Bellator should be bragging about, yeah, our homegrown guy is now going to go win the UFC championship. And, you know, it literally took him one fight where he was in there for 2 minutes and then got the main event. So, and I would also continue to rehash the fact that one of his most recent fights was a championship loss to Pitbull number two, as we like to call him, the younger of the Pitbulls, the champ in Bellator. You know, highlight that, continue to harp on that. If you do that, then yes, you can, I think you can gain some credibility and notoriety in the fact that Bellator has legitimate fighters. The same way when Strikeforce, when the UFC essentially disbanded Strikeforce and the Strikeforce fighters came over, you know, a lot of them ended up winning championships. So it's a way to, you know, to show that there's other organizations that have top talent.
Does that, I agree with you. I think they should make a point of emphasizing, but does that put less of a, how do you play it off? If you're Scott Coker, are you saying he's a great talent, but he couldn't win here. He had to go there. Like, how do you do it without making yourself as a brand seem like the lesser of the two?
I'd say we have some of the best talent in the world. The guy who was not even our number one guy went over to the UFC and won a championship. And say, by the way, he got knocked out and finished within a round by Pitbull number two.
Scott Coker, you hear that? Send a check.
Seriously, and buy some merch.
Yeah, buy some merch. TKOstore.com coming soon. Who has a better chance of winning this fight? From a technical standpoint, Oliveira on his feet or Chandler on the ground with Oliveira? So vice versa. So Oliveira is standing with Chandler. Chandler's on the mat with Oliveira. Who has the better opportunity?
I think Chandler can. So basically, which one has a better chance of surviving in the other one's strength? And to me, I think it's Chandler on the ground with Oliveira, because he was an All-American wrestler. And even in the press conference, he talked about that his wrestling style, he called it anti-jiu-jitsu. Which I thought was interesting in that he's like, look, I'm all about position and then punishment. And he has very effective ground and pound. Go back to Oliveira's last loss was against Paul Felder, who is not a wrestler, but is a good grappler, and stopped Oliveira with ground and pound with devastating elbows. So to me, while Oliveira has a great ground game, you know, he can get stopped via ground and pound. You know, I think Oliveira has decent striking. It's not, anything where he hasn't really knocked out a top guy. He can stun people, you know, here and there, but I, you know, it's decent stand up. It's not elite stand up. So that's where I would give the advantage to Chandler on the ground.
Overall here, fight, you're going to make your picks on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at ITF show coming up on Saturday. But who has the X factor on the fight?
Well, so I would say the X factor is Chandler's gas tank. So, again, we've only UFC fans have only seen Chandler for 2 minutes and 50 seconds in the first round. You know, in some of his most famous fights, two of his most famous fights were against Eddie Alvarez. In the second one, he did gas out a little bit towards the end of the fight. So the question, and, you know, and a guy who fights so explosively, it's literally science. It's science. You're not going to be able to maintain that level of explosivity, you know, later in the later championship round. So if Oliveira can take it into the third, fourth, and fifth round, could he then capitalize on a potentially depleted Chandler? So I'd say the X factor is Chandler's cardio. You know, what's going to go out? What's going to go down there?
Moving on to the co-main, we've already talked about it. Tony Ferguson, Beneil Dariush, how it probably would have happened anyway, but Dariush had to struggle to make weight, makes the weight. Is that, should we be concerned about that from a fight aspect? You know, Tony Ferguson, great on the mic, obviously, stirring the pot big time, but there's talk that he might be toast. He might be done. But now you got his opponent, Beneil Dariush, one of my all-time favorite names, and he struggled to make weight. Could be a factor. Maybe it's not, you know.
I feel like if you met Beneil Dariush in real life, you'd have difficulty just saying Beneil. You'd have to say, oh, how are you, Beneil Dariush? You like saying the whole name. There's a flow to the way there you say it.
Beneil Dariush.
I know. Like, you wouldn't just be able to say, like, oh, hi, Beneil. How are you?
I'd be like, hey.
Or
hey,
Mr. Dariush.
Yeah. Hey, Beneil Dariush. How are you, sir?
No, but so as to your question, you know, I think it's a very interesting fight. It's so from Tony's perspective, it's does Tony still have it? Is Tony still a top contender? And, you know, you can look, he definitely was outclassed his last two performances, but they were against top guys in the division. And there were, even though he wouldn't like to use excuses, there were some reasons that you might attribute to his poor performance with Gaethje. The fact that he stupidly decided to do the weight cut 3 weeks prior, I think that messed up his body. Then he took the Oliveira fight on short notice. He actually referenced the fact that this camp has gotten screwed up. He even was talking recently with Brock Lesnar about, you know, sort of reorganizing his camp and just really talking about taking care of himself, which is something that Brock Lesnar excels at. So, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see because, you know, I think Beneil Dariush is an excellent fighter, at least to this point, even though he's coming off he's in the midst of a 6-fight win streak. He's not considered yet the absolute cream of the crop. Now, he may end up beating Tony and then elevating himself to that stature, but I think this is a very good barometer basic for both guys. For Tony, if he still has it, and for Beneil Dariush, if he does have it, whether or not he is one of the elite guys. So it's a really exciting matchup.
And again, your pick coming at ITF show, Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Let's run down the rest of the main card here. Take me through it. What is it? What on the cards kind of stands out to you that you're excited to see?
So I'll just go in order. The featured fight, the third fight of the card is Caitlin Chookagian against Viviane Araújo in the women's flyweight division. Now, the bad news about it to begin with is that if you end up becoming the contender, you have to fight Valentina Shevchenko and you're going to lose embarrassingly. Nevertheless, these women are still competitors and they want to have that opportunity. Caitlin Chookagian already did have that opportunity. She's ranked second and she's now sort of serving as the gatekeeper because, I think the UFC is reluctant to put her back in the cage with Valentina because Valentina made quick work of her like she does everyone else. Viviani Araújo is very interesting. Unique style, very good stand-up. She's sort of in and out like Dominic Cruz, has a lot of movement. She tends to fade in the third round, so that'll be interesting. And I think this is a good test for her because Chookagian, against stand-up fighters, usually likes to take it to the ground, ground and pound. So we will see whether or not, we'll see how Araújo's ground game is in this fight, which I think is really good. You know, it's going to be an interesting contest. The next fight, Shane Burgos versus Edson Barboza. That's fireworks. So Edson Barboza is coming down, who has fought now several times in featherweight. Shane Burgos is a guy who I think sometimes almost to his detriment chooses to be in a war as opposed to fighting a smart, intelligent fight. But either way, it's definitely to the fans' benefit. I think this is going to be a fantastic fight. I would actually put money on this being fight of the night. I think this is really that good a fight. Then the last fight, the opener, is Matt Schnell against Rogério Bonterin. Should be an interesting fight. You know, the flyweight division, the men's flyweight division, you know, we sort of need to get, it needs to work itself out more to have a few more top contenders because obviously you have Brandon Moreno fighting Davison Figueiredo again. But after that, there's really not a clear number one contender. So I think there's a lot of guys from ranked and it, literally like the guys from like, you know, the number three ranking to number 12, they could all fight. And on any given day, you don't know who's going to win. So I think we need to have a lot more fights in the flyweight division for itself, for the division to figure itself out. And this is one of those. It should be a very entertaining high level fight, though.
Fistic fireworks, as Mauro Ranallo would say.
Well, fistic fireworks guaranteed in the Burgos-Barboza fight. I mean, that is can't miss. That is a great, great fight. That's great meme. Great matchmaking. Very excited about that fight.
Let's go to the prelims. Anything on the prelims stand out to you that you want to see that you find a fight? It's like, hey, look at this. This is going to be a good fight. People should watch this one. Prelims have been fantastic, by the way, for the past couple UFC events as a whole.
Yeah.
I mean, really absolutely. Good.
Yeah. So I think it's a mix between, for me, sometimes, and Mike, I'm sure you agree with this. Sometimes it's more like, hey, I want to see that fighter as opposed to being excited about the fight per se. And sometimes it's the matchup of two fighters that you're interested in. So case in point, the featured prelim card is one of my all-time favorites. Ronaldo Jacare Souza, just guy, very fascinating competitor, was one of the greatest BJJ practitioners of all time. Never quite, I mean, was very close to getting a title shot, never did. I think he's now sort of in the twilight of his career, but always puts on entertaining fights. Another one, a featherweight fight between Lando Venata, Mike Grundy. Lando Venata is always in an entertaining fight. You know, whether sometimes he fights up to his competition or he may fight down to it. Either way, it's always a competitive fight. And then another interesting women's flyweight. So Valentina Shevchenko's sister, Antonina, is going to be fighting Andrea Lee. Andrea Lee is very, very talented fighter. And so this is, I think, a very good barometer for both ladies to see where they stack in this division. Antonina is not quite her sister, unfortunately, but she is a little bit younger. So we'll see, you know, maybe this she's growing and improving. And then on the early prelims, which I believe are going to be on ESPN Plus and UFC Fight Pass, I think the first two fights, Christos Giagos versus Sean Soriano and Kevin Aguilar versus Tucker Lutz. I think they could be good. Two good stand-up affairs, some fistic fireworks there.
Christos is missing for the first time ever, apparently. The spring Greek Agora in Cherry Hill, New Jersey.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's an excellent point.
They never do it in the spring or do it in the spring. Christos, yeah, anyway. It's going to be a good night. Look, it's going to be a good night even just because of the fans. I mean, the show could be kind of people there. It's just a different type of energy. Do you think they're going to move away from doing the Apex or no? I mean, I haven't really read anything about it. It seems odd. It's weird. It's weird watching a pay-per-view in a full arena and then going backwards to the Apex for big fights with nobody there. Or I've seen people milling about. I don't know if it's family and friends or, you know, small amounts of people being let in. It's just odd.
Well, that one pay-per-view, they had, I guess, some vaccinated celebrities, and you had Travis Barker making out with one of the Kardashians. That was the highlight of my night. They should ban all Kardashians from the events, but that's just me. So all of the, I guess the plan moving forward, at least for now, is for each pay-per-view to take place in a full arena. So 263 is going to take place in Glendale, Arizona. I think that's where the Coyotes play, or do the Coyotes still exist?
Yeah. They do, but it's weird out there in Arizona. And I say it's weird because there's two arenas within miles of each other.
You have the one in Phoenix for the Suns.
Right. The Suns and I think the Suns play there. I believe the Coyotes play in Talking Stick Arena, which
Glendale.
Maybe. Yeah.
Yes. When that's where the football stadium is.
Correct.
And that's where the event is. It's in Talking, because I noticed
the that knowledge, I don't know. It doesn't help.
Between the two of us, the amount of random information that we possess, you know, if it was useful, we could save the world. But I remember when they were saying, "Oh, look, we're playing. They're going to fight a Talking Stick." I'm like, "Oh, okay." So yeah, that's where the 263 is, and then the Conor Poirier trilogy is at T-Mobile Arena in Vegas.
I'm still floored that they haven't put that in Allegiant Stadium.
I wonder if the Raiders gave pushback to that because they're about to be opening the stadium.
Wasn't thinking that. That's a fair point. They probably if there's nothing else scheduled until them, they want to be the first ones. Fair point.
Very fair. Sorry, I'm just messing with you. So I know that they're looking into fighting in London.
Interesting.
Yeah. But I guess if you think about it, fight nights, not that they're throwaways. I mean, we'll get into it next week. Next week's fight night is stacked. But it saves a lot of money. I mean, there's low overhead to hold it in the Apex.
Sure.
I would probably explore something where you could put in. Remember, that studio can actually hold a crowd of, I believe it's 1,000. I think that's the number.
Yeah.
I would look into holding 200-300 vaccinated people just to get some noise.
What was the venue that the Ultimate Fighter 1 finale was held in? It was the Thomas and Mack Center, but wasn't it the side arena there?
Yeah, it was the Cox Pavilion.
Right. So it was
where the women play basketball.
Right. So the smaller of the two venues, maybe 1,000 people, 1,500, something like that. And it was a cool, intimate environment for that event. Yeah. And I'm not saying they go back down the street there, but there's clearly room in that studio for some type of stand setup where you could put some fans in there give it a little bit of noise, a little bit of
just a little bit. Well, the first season of Dana White's Contender Series, it wasn't the first ever season, but when the UFC Apex first opened, they had a season of Dana White Contender Series with people. And you saw you know what it looked like to go old school wrestling movie? It kind of looked like this, a little bit like the crowd from the No Holds Barred finale scene, a little bit, except you didn't have that asshole producer in kidnapping women in the glass.
On that note, let's move on to the news and notes in the world of boxing and MMA. We're going to stick with MMA. We're going to start with the weird, and we're going to get to the somewhat normal. Anthony Rumble Johnson, he had a good night and then a very, very bad one. So Anthony Rumble Johnson, he returns. He gets a victory in Bellator in the Grand Prix last week. And then he's promptly arrested for use of a credit card that wasn't his. So It sounds identity theft. I use air quotes because that's a broad ranging thing, but that's what they call it.
Yeah, it's definitely going from the highest of highs to lowest of lows. Anthony John, he'd previously been questioned. There had been incidents regarding domestic violence. I hope this gets straightened out. I hope he didn't do it, and I hope he's able to continue on in the Grand Prix.
Truthfully, I haven't seen anything else about it. I know that he was arrested. He was out on bond, I think $15,000 bond, and that's it. It kind of went away.
Yeah. That's Bellator. UFC, for a little while, they used to enforce that code of conduct, but they don't do that anymore.
Well, I'm not saying that he should be suspended or whatever. It's just weird from a news standpoint.
Yeah.
That's like, yeah, this happened. He's been investigated. It's gone.
It's like, true. Okay. It went very quiet very quickly.
Is it a whole hell of a lot about nothing? Is it a mistake? You know, is this someone being an asshole? I guess we'll find out. Speaking of assholes and people being assholes, and this is really starting to get scary, is what it is the video came out, and we have it on InTheFight.net. You probably have seen it just about everywhere. Diego Sanchez is, air quotes again, training with Joshua Fabia. Diego Sanchez is hanging upside down like a piece of meat in Rocky. And this jerk off Fabia is slapping him, kicking him in the face, in the head, toughening him up. I don't know what to make of it. I watched it. We have it on the web, on our site. We have the response back from Fabia. This is from like March. This was older, and it must have been out there, but now it's kind of coming back to light. You know, Fabia and Diego are in a car on a podcast with Mike Swick, and they're explaining the whole thing. This is really scary.
Yeah, it's scary because Fabia is really, to me, taking advantage of Diego. He is controlling every aspect of his life. He's forcing Diego to cut ties with both friends and family. You know, you worry about where that leads. Bellator has already come out saying they're not interested in Diego's services. That video, honestly, so after that video, I watched that Sons of Sam documentary on Netflix. And during pieces of it, I'm like, you know, the Fabia Sanchez training video would sort of fit right in with this. It looked creepy. It honestly looked like something. I hope Fabia doesn't get off on this. It was just super creepy. And, you know, I do worry about Diego in that regard. He's someone who's been known to make some poor decisions in his life and also sort of seek alternative methods of doing things and realities. I don't know where this is going to lead, but it definitely is, as you said, taking a disturbing path. There, I don't see what possible benefit you could have from that training.
No, and now fighters are coming out, and they have been. I mean, fighters have been really vocal about this through social media and interviews, saying that that Diego needs help, that he needs to get away from this guy. I thought I read it, and I'm trying to find it. I should have written it down, but now Diego has said he will donate his brain to the UFC study. Is that correct?
Well, no, I think he's participating in a brain study.
Not right now, but well, that's the, but that's like,
I think there's two different things. I think you're thinking of, for instance, when someone died, like, who was it that tragically killed themselves and said, I want them to take a look at my brain.
I mean, Andre, you know, from the football aspect. For CTE. Chris Nowinski's program.
Yes. Yeah. So that's not that there. I think there's actual studies going on, like cognitive tests and things of that nature. So there's no donation of brains.
Understood. I thought it was a post-mortem kind of thing.
Still living.
So, but now he's still participating with this. He's still working with them. But on the other hand, he's going, there's that whole controversy. This is bizarre. There's the whole controversy of they're trying to kill me. They're going to kill me.
Dana sleeping with all the roster.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, look, I haven't been the biggest Diego Sanchez fan. He always came off as a little quirky to me.
Started the Yes Movement.
He did start the Yes Movement. He, from a Ultimate Fighter, the show perspective, I didn't like the character they portrayed, but the guy is, you know, you don't want to see someone go through this publicly, like really publicly. This isn't something happening behind closed doors. It's happening live and on television or on social media, and it's scary.
Yeah, I mean, the guy's been through enough and made enough poor decisions on his own. Now it's like he has a guy leading him through all these things. And like I said, I think that Fabio obviously has his own things, but to me, that looked, there was something about that. Maybe I've seen one too many SVU episodes. There was something sexual in nature to that for Fabia. I'm sorry.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Moving on, because I have a feeling this is going to be kind of like, what did Tito say recently? Which he hasn't said anything recently. But this is going to be one of those things that's going to be a weekly. We're going to be discussing it. Or bi-weekly, when you listen to us on the weigh-in on Monday or Tuesday. When I don't know. I just don't know what to say. It's really scary. It's really sad. Zhang Weili, wouldn't be able to be an athlete in Philadelphia or New York, apparently.
No. So her manager said that one of the main contributing reasons for her poor performance and quick loss was that she was not prepared and was taken so off guard by the fact she received all those boos in Jacksonville, in what was a very highly patriotic crowd, I guess we'll call them that. I think it was unfortunate that she got booed. If people were blaming her, I don't know if it was because of what Rose said with the whole better dead than red. I don't know if it was people.
Oh, come on.
You know, for the virus.
No, you know, that was, yeah, exactly. It was,
she didn't start the virus. Nor did she start the fire. Billy Joel. Yeah. No. She didn't bring the virus. She didn't cause the pandemic. It's not her fault. Nevertheless, I do think that world-class fighters should be able to push through a negative crowd. Rocky did it. You know, it happens.
Chase Utley did it. He was getting booed unmercifully by the New York crowd during the Home Run Derby, and he looked right in the camera and he said, "Boo, fuck you."
That's a good point. I remember that.
That's the way you do it. So Zhang Weili, whenever she comes back, they better hope that she's fighting in the apex, because wherever it is, it's going to be 20 times worse.
Well, not necessarily. It kind of depends. Remember, Florida is a different animal, right? It depends on where in America she's fighting.
So I'm going,
unfortunately.
No, I'm not even going. I'm not even going politics, country thing. I'm going that, you know, smart fan perspective on it. Like, if this is a fight in, well, you just use examples, because I don't know how it's working around the country, a Chicago, a New York, a Philadelphia, it's going to be one of these things that, not because she's Chinese, not because she's, you know, communist or whatever, because fans are going to be like, yeah, we can, that one, we right can there,
mess with her.
We can mess with her. That's what it's going to be.
Yeah. Never show weakness.
Never show weakness. Strike first. That's coming out soon. Season 4 of
Cobra Kai.
Cobra Kai. I'm very excited for it.
I love that show. But seriously, like, what? Why doesn't some jiu-jitsu school just show up to both schools and just break everyone's arm and tap them out?
We can have a whole conversation about that as we get closer.
And I'm sure we will.
We will. UFC heavyweight division news. Dana White has confirmed that UFC is targeting a Derek Lewis title defense against Derek Lewis as the first defense for Francis Ngannou. Lots of things here. A very jacked up John Jones isn't the guy. Thoughts here. I mean, did you see the pictures of John Jones on his social media?
Looking a little tough. Well, he's, I wouldn't say he doesn't look yoked. He's just bigger.
He looks huge, though. I mean, like, this is...
Think about his brothers. I mean, yeah, it's in the DNA. I mean, they're all big, you know, they're big boys. So, look, he's getting ready. It's unfortunate. I would love to see that fight. Perhaps the UFC is thinking, look, have Ngannou fight Derek Lewis. If Ngannou wins, it only makes the fight bigger. Here's the problem. Derek Lewis can knock out anyone on the planet. And I'd honestly, if you were to tell me, I think Ngannou is the more athletic of the two. But I can easily see Derek Lewis winning that fight against Ngannou. And then you've now ruined the whole Ngannou-John Jones thing. So I think that could backfire.
It's gonna be something to keep an eye on. Let's talk about money. Money makes fighters. Money makes fights. Conor McGregor tops the list of Forbes' top earning athletes at $180 million. Now, this is earning. So I didn't notice the breakdown, but I'm assuming this is purse money and everything else, correct?
So I interpreted it was for most money for the year 2020 to 2021. So the way I interpreted it, it was...
I think it was March to March, yeah, or something like that. So 20 to 21.
And in this particular year, he not only had one fight, so he fought at UFC 257, which he probably made somewhere close to $20 million, give or take $10 million. I'd say probably $20 to $30 million. But then... he also sold his shares of proper number 12. That's where all that money comes from. Any other year, he's not even on the top of the line. He's still making a lot. But I think because of the sale of the company, that's why he vaulted up to number one.
That's what I figured. But it's a great piece of propaganda, so yeah, to speak, for MMA and UFC. Because you know who I didn't see on that list?
You didn't see any boxers.
I didn't see Jake Paul. So,
Jake Paul.
Yeah. Jake Paul. No, I didn't see him. I didn't see any boxers, but that might change. Tyson Fury, Anthony Joshua set to fight in Saudi Arabia on August 14th. They're building a special arena for the event.
Yeah.
So this is interesting, and it's in Saudi Arabia. So major asterisks there?
Well, it's sports whitewashing. It's a way, and this has been done literally for over 100 years now. It's a way for a country that may not necessarily have the best record with respect to human rights or, the rights of various peoples to put on sporting events so that the world could overlook their shortcomings. And I believe they're paying like the biggest host fee in the history of sports. It's like $150 million or something of that nature.
So there's already $150 million that's going into the pot just to have the event there.
I don't know if all of that money goes straight to the fighters. Some of it might go to the promoters.
Yeah, come on now. Yeah.
But before, there's already that much money that's going into the pot, which is ridiculous. Then the thing is, so is this fight going to take place Saudi Arabia local time? Is this going to take place... are they going to gear it towards the East Coast of America, or are they going to gear it towards local London time, local UK time? Because as our UK fans would definitely, they're probably screaming right now. This is the biggest fight in UK boxing history. Definitely the right. biggest fight in UK heavyweight boxing history. So, frankly, they deserve to have it their local time as opposed to catering to the American crowd.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I don't know that this is necessarily going to be geared towards American eyes, so to speak. But look, if we're on a 5-hour delay where we are on the East Coast. Yes. So if the fight starts at 10 o'clock,
I know where we're going in the math. With the two of us. I'm just saying
if the fight starts at 10 o'clock in the UK, which is reasonable for a boxing fight.
10 p.m. Yeah.
Right. The main fighters are walking out, or even 11. Then it's 6 o'clock East Coast, And then it's 3 o'clock on the West Coast of the United States when you're looking at your viewing.
1 p.m. in Hawaii.
Right, exactly. So it's not unreasonable to gear it towards the British, UK audience, the European audience. It would make sense.
I don't know what time it would be in Saudi Arabia.
Does it matter?
No, I don't know.
I'm just saying.
I have no idea.
I don't know that it matters.
Yeah.
If the fighters just train for that moment and the fans, whomever they are coming, they're going there, or it's going to be a destination kind of thing, right? So
it's going to be a 10,000 seat tent.
Right.
And you'll have, I would suspect half of the crowd will be foreign spectators. Half of the crowd will be
the princes.
Saudi and all Arabia. Well, but they sit in the front like yeah. they do in the rep. And then you'll have regular Saudi Arabian citizens.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Let's get something to keep an eye on real quick before we go to talk a little bit dark side of the ring. Kayla Harrison versus Dana White.
Yeah.
Is what we're
I take Kayla Harrison.
I take Kayla Harrison too, but she's not wrong. For those who don't know, Kayla Harrison, professional Fight League fighter. She's a 2-time Olympic participant in judo.
Yes. And at least one gold medal.
Right. Legit badass here.
Yeah.
You know, she's making a lot of money in professional Fight League because she wins the tournament and wins $1 million. There is a big thing out there that she should be fighting in the UFC. Dana White says, I don't know. She says, look, if Dana White is ready to pay me a lot of money, I'll make him a lot of money. She's not wrong.
Here's the problem, and I say this with all due respect to women fighting in the 145-pound division, but the UFC hasn't been able to even field a full 145-pound division. I mean, we saw what Amanda Nunes did to Megan Anderson, who's considered one of the best 145-pounders in the world. It wasn't even competitive. So you have one fight with Amanda Nunes. I guess maybe the UFC hates doing business with Cyborg, and she's in Bellator, so you can't even get her there. What are you going to do? Kat Zingano is over in Bellator. There's no one for her to fight. It just doesn't even make sense. It would be a one, unless they would just keep fighting. You know, it'd be like a best of seven between her and Amanda Nunes.
Worked for Booker T and Chris Benoit. So
that it did.
So that you could do it. Real quick, let's talk about it. We have about 7 minutes left here in the program. Dark Side of the Ring debuts last week, double dip episode on Brian Pillman. Your initial thoughts on the Brian Pillman 2-for series? I really forgot how much of a almost transcendent character he was on the way to being until he unfortunately passed away.
I think you just said it perfectly. It really, you know, obviously there are several of these episodes have been about people tragically with their lives cut short. And Brian Pillman being another one, it truly was one of the great what ifs. If Brian Pillman had stayed alive, because he really could have been a central figure in the Attitude Era for the WWF. And it really is sad because he was, prior to his injury, was a tremendous performer and a tremendous hand in the ring.
Tremendous performer, tremendous hand in the ring, tremendous mind.
Yeah.
Like you really saw, and it was crazy because you don't know if he was crazy or not, that he had this thing going. Throughout the episode, you have the football coach from the Bengals, the weightlifting guy, and then Eric Bischoff is interviewed, and they're talking about everyone's in concert here, right? They're trying to screw Bischoff and McMahon to make the most amount of money. How did it come off to you?
I thought the coach came off both creepy and schmucky, but again, I thought they did a great job in terms of, except for the fact they didn't get Vince McMahon. Which he doesn't participate in the Dark Side of the Ring documentaries. I thought they did a great job with the guest. You know, the only other thing I thought that was very interesting, you saw as compared with, this was the first death of an in-ring talent, I felt like, for WWF, you know, in for a while, I guess. You know, and you saw how Vince McMahon and the team handled that as compared with the death of Owen and the death of Guerrero and Benoit. I mean, the fact that he interviewed his wife was classless. That was disgusting.
Oh, it was absolutely classless. I mean, is it a surprise, though? I'm sure
he learned his lesson, though, because they didn't.
So think about everything doing that. So think about everything leading up to that point. You have the gun incident, which,
yeah,
whatever. But, you know, it's one of those things where it was not a surprise.
Yeah. Yeah. So but all in all, just, you know, Dark Side of the Ring continues to hit home runs with their each episode, each separate documentary. And Brian Pillman, really one of the more fascinating characters in wrestling history.
They dropped an episode on apparently the ultra-violent deathmatch king, Nick Gage. I watched CZW. I know who he is. We're local, literally local to him. He's a neighbor of ours. You know, I remember the bank robbery happening. You watched the episode. I haven't watched it yet. But so give me your little, I don't know, give me a minute or two on it to just sell me on watching it.
Well, so for, as you mentioned, for our, you know, our fans, particularly internationally, Nick Gage is literally someone who grew up within 5 miles of both Mike and I. And we both, Mike has seen him around. Mike attended events where he wrestled. I literally remember just seeing this guy around. But I thought it was a great job. They brought in Jon Moxley, who I think is one of the bigger names, current wrestler that I think they brought in. And he does a great job of sort of educating fans to the world of death matches. So, because this is sort of the first episode with death matches, and I think it's just a really interesting story about the psyche of what goes into a guy wanting to do that, and how he is actually able to connect with a crowd, albeit a limited crowd, in this extremely violent manner. And the guy has been through everything. Some his fault, some not his fault. It's been a rough life, and it's just a very interesting story.
I can imagine the story from the aspect of, again, watching CZW, which has taken on a life of its own. Game Changer Wrestling Now is where he is, and his deathmatch thing. I can remember going back. I can pinpoint dates. You know, October 7th, 2000. I was at a CZW show in Washington Township, New Jersey. Barbed wire death match. No problem. I'm cool with the barbed wire death match. I got no issues with that. You know, I'm an ECW fan. ECW was sort of still around. Not really. They're on their way out. But everything else that came with it, the light bulbs, the weed whackers. And I was like, what the hell is this shit? And it's going to be interesting to watch. And then I remember the bank robbery. So, yeah. You know, and this is going to be us seeing a lot of our, I don't want to say immediate area.
Yeah. But, well, not our particular town, but our county. It's very interesting.
So it's going to be interesting. I'm looking forward to watching that one. Coming up is Collision in Korea, The Ultimate Warrior, Grizzly Smith, so the Jake Roberts family, Rock and Robin, Dynamite Kid. That's going to wrap up the first half. Anything there that really piques you?
Collision in Korea, I've heard crazy stories about that, as well as the Dynamite Kid, who is one of my all-time favorites.
I'm really psyched for Collision in Korea. I want to know more about the event as a whole.
Yeah.
I understand the 200,000. I need someone to tell me, because Bischoff's going to be on it, how this whole thing really went down. And this, I need to hear the stories of the guys who nearly did not make it out of Korea because they offended the regime.
Yes, exactly.
The steroid trial is coming up in season two, second half of the season. That's going to be interesting. Plane Ride from Hell, Extreme Pro Wrestling, Johnny Canine, and Chris Canyon. So once we get closer to that, we'll tune into it.
Yep.
Warriors coming up. I'm interested in seeing how they portray him. They do a good job of pointing out all the warts. I hope they do.
I will withhold judgment on both upcoming Ultimate Warrior documentaries until I see them.
There we go. On that note, we're going to wrap it up for this week. If you're in the Philadelphia tri-state area, the Paul's Table, 7 East Lancaster Avenue in Ardmore for your fine Italian dining. TKO Store, tkostore.com. Merch coming soon. I'm Mike. That's Brett. We will catch you next week.